Hello, everyone. I'm Robbie Dorman, and this is the Serial Fanaticist, the podcast for fans of everything. Welcome. Today, I am joined by Paige LaVoie to talk about Wilder Girls by Roy Power, a new YA horror novel. We loved the book, and it was a really fun discussion. We talk about the beautiful and intricate prose, the nuanced relationship between the three main characters, and our feelings about the ending of the story. It was a great chat, as always, with Paige. On to the discussion! Hello, everyone. I'm here again with Paige LaVoie to talk about books. Paige, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're talking about Wilder Girls by Rory Power is our book club book for this episode. Synopsis. A group of teenage girls are trapped, quarantined on an island after some sort of virus?
Sickness.
Called the Tox has kind of started mutating them and or killing them. Lord of the Flies-ish, certainly. That's the comparison in their blurb, and I would definitely agree with that. YA horror, I would say. Probably thriller, horror thriller.
Yeah, I heard it classified as, like, body horror.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's in there. There's a lot of icky stuff.
I would say more of a, more thriller elements than stuff like The Merciless, where I feel like The Merciless was just, like, straight horror. Like, not as much the thrill and mystery aspects of it, where this had a lot more of the, like, intrigue, I guess.
Yeah, I think it had a good mix of everything that you want in horror. I think it had the mystery, for sure. It had the tension that you're looking for in a thriller. It has a lot of the, I don't know, ambiance and environmental and kind of moody feelings of general, like, of horror, like the feeling of horror, not necessarily the genre horror, but of just feeling kind of like dread of, mm-hmm. of just a kind of anxiety riding around with you as you're reading this. You're like, oh no, all of this is going to be bad. This is all bad. Everything's bad. Something bad is happening. Something bad is coming. Something bad has happened, et cetera, et cetera. How do you feel, Paige? Do you like it?
I really liked it. Yeah. I'm curious what your thoughts were, too, because as I was reading this, I'm just like, oh, my gosh, I feel like there hasn't been a book that we've both been over the moon about in a while. Like, and I'm wondering if this is the one. I'm wondering if we both really enjoyed this one, or if your thoughts are different.
No, I really enjoyed it. It's really good. It's very good. It's very impressive, especially as a debut novel. I think that's her first book.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow! It really read the writing, the prose were very like seasoned, and I said to Matt while I was reading it, I just went, this is a book that I feel like I should study. Like, the things that she did with, like, tone and pacing and repetition. It was written in, like, a first-person past tense, wasn't it? But it felt very, like, active present tense, which I thought was really impressive.
It does a lot really well. It manages... It bites... It takes a big bite. It feels like the premise itself is very, very simple. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a strength in the fact that it is simply, hey, there is a school for girls. Not really a reform school.
Like a boarding school?
Boarding school, yeah.
It seemed like some of them were sent there because they were problem kids, but other people were sent there maybe as like a status sort of thing.
Yeah,
like this beautiful island boarding school for girls. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think it's purposely vague about everything that's happened in the past before mm-hmm. the talks, because frankly, everything that happened before the talks barely matters anymore. It's not post-apocalyptic, even though it definitely calls that into question at times. You're not necessarily, you know, they're told they're living under quarantine, but everything you're told is you have to take with a grain of salt, because mm-hmm. the two girls that narrate are both unreliable simply because they're people. And then they're also being told a lot of information that is lies or not true or half truths or whatever. And really the premise is girls on an island trying to survive in the mm-hmm. face of this illness, whatever it is. But it spins out into a lot more than that simple premise. It's really and I think that it's like I was thinking about this as we were leading up to record, and I'm like, how do I try and encompass what this book is telling us? Like, what is the message? What is this about? And I don't think it's about any one particular thing. I think it is about a lot of stuff that, and I think it manages to really encompass, you know, I think the question of control, the question of friendship and relationships and romance between the three main characters. It talks about, I don't know, environmental apocalypse and all that. Right.
Global warming. I did not expect global warming to come up, and then it did, and I went, yeah, we got to protect this Earth. This is some bad stuff.
Yeah, it's very bad. And you know, and it does more than that even. It kind of goes in a lot of different places, but it feels very what is a good word I'm looking for? Like, not, I don't know, bespoke. It feels very crafted. It feels very purposeful.
Yeah, I agree with you there. There's like there's something about this book that just feels really different. Like, there's something, I don't, like, I think bespoke's not a bad word. Like, it's very finely crafted. Whenever I always have to remind myself that, like, this was not the first draft of this book. Like, it did not probably come out looking this way. And so I wonder what a first draft of this looked like. I wonder how much she whittled away at the story and how many rough drafts or revisions she went through, because it is really just like finely crafted. I also love, like, it's not that the characters don't have morals, because they do, but I love how gray everything was, both in like kind of the color scheme that she painted of the rocks and the sea and the fog, if everything is gray, but also morally, there isn't like a clear, you see people doing bad things, but it was hard for me to find a clear bad guy. I mean, the headmistress at the end, I was just like, oh gosh. But at the same time, yes, she turned out to be a villain, but everyone really was convicted on that they were trying so hard to do the right thing and like protect people in the way that they thought was right. And that was interesting.
I mean, I think that's, it's the mark of any good antagonist in anything. It's not necessarily, oh, they are the bad person, so they do bad things. And they try and hurt people. Well, no. In the real world, people don't just aren't, they don't go, oh, I'm a villain, I'm going to do bad stuff. No, they have self-interest at heart. They think they're the hero. They think they're doing the right thing for whatever reason. Either it's to protect themselves or protect their family or to ensure a wider philosophy and worldview they think is the right one, and they're going to ensure that it succeeds. And they don't think, oh, this is the bad thing to do, who cares? They go, oh, this is the right thing to do. Sure, some people might get hurt, but ultimately, this is better. This is more important than them, or they're hurt. And they'll get over it, or they don't matter. Certainly, there's people who are cold and unempathetic mm-hmm. and don't care about other people, but ultimately, they still think about, I am a hero. I'm doing the right thing. And I think in this book in particular, every character is like that. And in it, I think that it is very portrayed as all these people are doing whatever they can to scratch and claw and just survive. That it is kind of the mission statement very early on in the book. They're told, stay on the island and try and survive. Survive as long as you can until help comes. Mm-hmm. And I think the book starts in a perfect place. We were talking about how it's a fast read and it's relatively short. That is not a complaint on my part. I don't want a book to drag on. I don't want to read preamble. People talk about don't write prologues, and I don't think they mean, oh, you can't write things that set up a plot. They mean if it's not important, don't write it.
Right.
And everything in this is important. It starts as things are falling. It's been like, it starts 18 months after they've kind of been quarantined and abandoned. And there is no, oh, let's spend half the book building up to the point where the tox breaks out. And then we are at the point where the book starts. Well, why is that? Why would that need to be written? It doesn't. Because by starting right when the interesting stuff happens, you are, I don't know, compelled, you're pulled through this book. I read it in like two sittings. I was also sick when I was reading it, so it put me in a very specific frame of mind that I think was appropriate.
Yep.
I don't know. There's no waste in it. I think that speaks to the bespoke nature of it. You ask about how many rough drafts are. I don't know. That's an interesting thing. I think, you know, when you think about people's first novels, usually their first novels is something that's been sitting inside them for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And eventually you get it to a point where you're like, okay, I'm going to release it now. But I don't, it feels like this was labored over. It feels like there's a lot of specific choices, not just in general plot sense, but also in word choice and structure and the way that we are bounced back and forth between the two perspectives, though we're never given a third. I was really expecting for us to get Reese in there at some point, but it never happens.
And I was, as soon as I realized that it switched perspectives, I'm like, oh, it's going to switch between the three girls. That makes sense. And I'm just realizing that now. Hetty's like focus, even though we get like romance and stuff like it, with her and Reese, it's her focus is I need to find my best friend. It's really not as much the romance or the attraction, although I think that was such a good like part of the story and the relationship building. But it almost makes sense that Reese, it's made a point in the book so many times to say how Reese felt left out and how she was kind of like an add-in to the group. She never quite fit in with the two of them. Like, she always kind of felt like an extra. And so that I feel like is almost an interesting symbolism to leave her thoughts out of it, you know?
Right. And she is the kind of physically dominant one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that putting her outside of the out of our reckoning, basically, we don't really know what she's thinking at any one point. I think it makes her feel more like a force of nature about of this very powerful but unpredictable girl who at first seems cold, and then you understand when you begin to understand her feelings a little bit more, you kind of, I think what you said is correct. I think occluding her from our view, basically, we can't see her thoughts like we can with Hetty or Byatt.
Thank you for saying Byatt's name first, because I could not figure out how to say that out loud.
I assume it's just Wyatt, but with a B.
Okay, great.
That's my assumption.
I was like, I couldn't figure it out. I was going to ask you before we started recording, and that's why I made the choice. I'm like, she's very focused on her best friend.
Well, it's, I think they're all there, and I think it is, they are, I think the choices of names, I think, is even important in this, and like, because it feels, this book feels otherworldly, it feels like a dream at times, dreamlike, and it bounces back and forth between this kind of brutal reality that they live in, where everyone is hungry all the time, where they fight and claw over every last bit of food, and they are worried about the monsters outside their walls. And then also these moments of very of delicate and soft and emotional resonance, especially in primarily with the three girls, with the three these three characters here, as we kind of learn this weird dynamic that they are in, where, you know, their bunk bed, where, you know, Bai and Hetty sleep on the bottom bunk together, and Reese is on the top by herself, and this kind of weird, this weird feeling out of their relationship, and how, you know, when we first see that, you know, Hetty, that first time we see Hetty fake being asleep, and she hears Bai and Reese talk about stuff without purposefully excluding her from this conversation. They don't want her to know. And her feelings about that, and how, like, how she is, how every kind of, every small bit of intimacy and closeness is just as important as that orange that they fight for, and how that is constant, that is on her mind just as much as the food. And like, she's at a certain point, Hetty just doesn't eat. You know, she stops eating because she feels guilty about eating a chocolate bar.
Oh my God. I loved that. I loved all the, like, it felt very real that she knows the secret, and she got to have this like small bite of chocolate and sees all this food get thrown out. And then every time anyone eats, it's just, she feels so guilty that she's sick. I was just like, oh my God, like the attention to the emotions in this book. And I just loved it. Just at that point where I'm just like, this is a podcast where I talk about books, but all I want to do is be like, this book was great.
It's real intricate is the word I was looking for earlier.
Intricate.
It feels very intricate. It feels like a watch. It feels like a grandfather clock. It feels like lots of little tiny gears moving around in and out, and moving things in and out of place. And I think I think I'm not without critique for it. I think I do have some mild nitpicks that, you know, I don't. It certainly doesn't stop me from recommending it. I think it's really, really good. I think, I don't know why, I feel like at a certain point calling things, I think we have this discussion every time, but the like calling this a YA book feels, I don't, almost dismissive. Like I'm at what point do we just stop using YA? Cause it, like, at a certain point, like, well, it's just everything. It is everything. Yeah, this is just a book. It's not, I don't know.
YA is supposed to only mean the age group that the characters are,
right?
Like, that's the only thing that it's really, and I think it just, people look down on it because they're like, oh, it's books for teens, they can't be important, well, they can't mean things. And it's like, to all of those people, shut up.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's my larger problem with genres. Genre and categorization in general, it just becomes marketing at a certain point. It's not about the quality of the because this book, I feel like, is it is, I don't know, like I would not even call, I would call this bordering on literary fiction at a certain point. There are certainly elements of horror in it, but it is also just as well crafted and not, it's not, I don't know. I want to see this win, like, horror awards. I want to see it win, like, literary fiction. I want it to be considered serious, like, a real book and not just dismissed as, like, some kind of genre fiction, because I feel like it is that good. It is that, and I think the prose, I think, is the strongest part of this book. I think there are some minor plotting issues I would pick at. I think the prose is so strong.
Yeah, they were stunning. Like, the way that this book is written, it's just, so I was reading the hardcover and there were all of these big spaces, and you were probably reading the Kindle version.
Mm-hmm.
Was it formatted the same way where it would be like kind of like a big gap in thoughts and then it would come back in? I wish I had bookmarked it where it would like describe a room or a dream and then it would have like a giant pause in the text and then just say the word like awake, like, and start describing the new environment that she was in. But there were like these really large gaps in the typesetting, like purposefully. So you kind of like feel a little disoriented, and it was very cool.
I don't think there was ever, it was all just normal page breaks and I don't know, underscores basically dividing these paragraphs. Okay. But it's not, there's no big gaps in space or anything like that.
Interesting. I'll have to text you a picture of what I'm talking about, because it was so interesting. It was just, even like the artistry with the formatting of the book was cool.
I mean, I think that, yeah, I mean, that's a thing, you digital books, they just don't. It is a one thing I miss about when I'm reading a digital book, is very much there are conscious choices about when you're formatting a physical book and how you lay it out. And you can make those choices in a physical book. You can't do it as easily in a digital book, even though you could. But there's a lot of space in the by it chapters, but it's never like big giant. It's just mostly because they're very short paragraphs and, you know, there's a lot of breaks, but it's never big gaps of space.
Yeah, it was cool, especially in her chapters, because she's like in and out of consciousness so frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Teddy.
Poor Teddy.
Oof.
Teddy didn't do so hot.
No.
Teddy didn't do so great with the tox.
No.
This book is very brutal.
Yeah.
Which is the one thing that I was unsure about how you would feel about, considering how you mentioned, how you talked about Merciless.
I mean, it did. But the thing is, I really liked the Merciless too. It's just like, sometimes I'll like be reading these books and be like, oh man, why do I feel nauseous? That doesn't make sense. I guess I'm going to keep reading. And then my stomach will be in like knots. And I'm just like, huh, what a crazy happenstance that I was trying to make dinner last night. And I'm just like, you know, I can't even look at that chicken right now. So this is on you, Matt. I can't. So yeah, I think it affects me. But I can't stop reading. I don't know. Like, I don't mind it if the story is worth it, I guess.
I mean, I don't, it is never, I think that there is a fine line. I think everyone it probably is different for every person. But, you know, some people are gore hounds where they can take anything and it means, and they could just bring it on. I can just watch a horror movie or read a horror book over and over and over again. Doesn't matter how much gore is there. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't affect me. I'm able to disconnect that. body horror in particular is my favorite of, like, if you're talking about gore, because it is the one thing that challenges me. It is the one thing that I still find upsetting at times. Like, I can watch most straight horror story. Like, if I watch a Jason movie and he chops someone in half with a machete, it does not bother me at all. I don't even think twice about it. Giant splashes of blood and guts, whatever. It doesn't bother me at all. But body horror, the way that it presents that juxtaposition of identity, of your body and how you look is so important and formative about your construction of self. You, and especially as you get older, you are, and you kind of get used to your body, you know, when you're a teenager, and then, like, these are teenagers, so there's also a element of, like, the talks hit them as they hit puberty. And that kind of add to the layer of, you know, your body changing as you hit your teens. And there's even, like, she even talks about the girls stopped having their periods.
Yeah.
Because of the talks, it changed them. And, like, and that is, like, all those, like, small details add up and add to a substantial change to a person and how a human is supposed to work, how your body is supposed to work. And I think it's because of that fact, because of how it relates to how you think of who you are, that it still affects me so strongly. Like, I watch Cronenberg movies, they still bother me at a fundamental level. I love them for the most part, but they still bother me, like The Fly why can't I think of the biggest movie? I can't think of the name. It has James Woods in it. As a television. You've never seen this movie. Cronenberg.
You're gonna say it and be like, oh yeah, I've seen that. I haven't. I can guarantee.
Videodrome is the movie I'm thinking of.
Okay, no, I have not.
You would not enjoy Videodrome. I'll tell you that, Paige. It's a weird ass movie, but it is definitely a formative body horror work to me. And this, because the way she describes how these girls have mutated, how they have second spines emerging from their skin, or poor Hetty and her eye.
Mm-hmm.
And how they are, it erupts occasionally, and it oozes constantly. She's wiping it all the time. It's just constantly oozing, and they stitch it shut. And I'm like, oh, it just makes you feel like that is not what's supposed to happen. That it feels so inhuman. It is as inhuman as you can get. And, you know, they talk about the crab.
Oh, yeah.
Multiple times. And it makes you remember, like, crabs are not, you know, most arthropods or whatever, they are so distinct from humanity. Like, if you look at a cow, you can recognize, like, it has fur and it has big eyes and it, like, mm-hmm. it moves and it breathes like us and it gives milk and it gives birth and it's recognizable as something related to us. You look at a crab, it looks like a weird alien.
That is true. Crabs look very different.
They have weird claws. They're hard.
They got them claws.
Claws and stalky eyes. And, like, what? Uh-huh. That's, how is that? It's so distant from us. And every time these girls start adding, they have something new that, it, like, her eye is... Like, Hetty is, frankly, one of the luckier girls.
I did really like the way... It sounds strange to say I liked the way that everything was described, but I liked the way that she peppered in all the details about the mutations. Like, I felt like we got more and more little details as the story went on, instead of it just being, like, an info dump of gross details. You know what I mean? Where it felt very intentional the way that it was like paced out. And I felt like it made the pictures of them that I have created in my mind, like, continue to change throughout the story. Like, but also at any point in time, I feel like you were getting to a point and then I cut you off, but did you think that they were going to like get and wield like powers at any point in time?
I thought about it, but I think this book is not, it's certainly within the realm of possibility, but after a certain point, I think largely after after Byatt went to the lab, mm-hmm. and what happened to, what's his face, boy?
Oh, Teddy. Poor Teddy.
Poor Teddy. After what happened to him, and after, you know, after we get the first couple of interviews with the scientist lady, I'm pretty much dismissed that. I certainly don't expect it, and I probably would be a little disappointed at a certain point, because I feel like this book is certainly, it is about drawing victory from despair. It is not from like achieving some kind of physical dominance over anyone or anything. Like, frankly, everything that happens is basically a degradation of physical dominance. There is every attempt by any of the characters to control a situation fail mm-hmm. at every step. There is never any one point. It is things fall apart again. They have a loose semblance of order to start the book, of these girls are the boat girls. These girls are on watch. And there is this hierarchy of the headmistress and down the line. But all we are seeing is that kind of leadership fall apart as the book continues. The nature is getting wilder and wilder and more powerful. And by the end, a massive tox-fueled bear is destroying the building. It is just and they don't try and save anyone.
No, I wanted to ask you about that as well. Yeah, they don't.
They abandon all the girls. When at the end the bear is running through, and theoretically Reese knows a way off the island. She knows where there's a boat, and Hetty and Reese leave. They could have taken more girls with them, but at this point, they have been betrayed over and over and over again. This is not about saving people. It is about saving yourself and your group. And your friends or your, I don't even know if I would call them girlfriends. They have a sort of romantic relationship, but it is so complicated that I hesitate to put any kind of label on it other than friend. And like, even that I think is challenged at multiple points, if they're even friends. Like, they are bonded, but mm-hmm. are they friends? I don't know. And I don't think, would they be friends if this wasn't happening? If the world wasn't if their world wasn't falling apart?
They were friends before the talks happened, but it certainly made them, I think, latch closer onto each other.
Right. I mean, and that's what I mean. I mean, like, they would be friends, but would they be this close where they are like risking each other's lives and constantly willing to sacrifice for each other? Like, literally, both of them are willing to die for the other, like, and multiple times do almost die because of what they are going through. And I think that is like, I get it for them getting superpowers. That would be it. It feels like it, like, that is what we are kind of programmed about, like mutation X-Men kind of thing, where you go, oh yeah, they got a random mutation and suddenly they can teleport, or they have laser eyes, or they can shapeshift. And like, I can't think of the name of the book we read with the electric shock.
The Power, wasn't it?
Yeah, The Power. Like, that is, I think that book is kind of that same kind of like, oh, it's, yeah, there, you'll get a mutation and you will have some new ability. In this, there is no, there is not a single benefit to any of their mutations. It is all negative and horrible.
Yeah, and I thought at the beginning of the book, I thought that that's where we were going. I thought we were going X-Men direction, where there's the girl with gills. I thought that that was going to come into play somehow and be useful. I was curious about what the second spine meant, and like what, like if any power that could represent, what it would be. And yeah, as we went through the, I almost think that was kind of cool that from the media that's out there, you do see mutations and you think powers like X-Men, and going through the book, it was just not that story. Just kind of like how I feel like with this sort of book, you also think that you're going to have a some sort of supervillain, like, ah, yes, the island was all set up by this corporation to test this product, or something to make soldiers for war. And it wasn't that. That's not. It was all not black and white. It was very nuanced, and it surprised me. It surprised me a lot, because I went in with some expectations of like a teens getting superpowers kind of book.
Yeah.
I think I also saw a review somewhere that likened this to X-Men. And now that I've read it, I'm like, how?
It is. If it's, there are certainly, like, among the X-Men's, like, stories, there are some that are focused on people who have, you know, who get mutant powers, but the mutant powers are useless or detrimental to their life. Like, they have those stories, but largely it is not about that. It is about Wolverine and Cyclops and Nightcrawler and Mystique and Professor X and Magneto, who have these incredible, amazing powers, and they look like normal people, and there's no, you know, their conflicts are ones of of any kind of afflicted minority group, where, you know, they are a threat to humanity, etc. Mm-hmm. But it's not about, oh, you know, the Morlocks, I think, are a closer comparison, which are the mutants that live in the sewers of New York City, because they look weird. Like, there's one that just looks like a little frog man, and he has real no powers. He just looks like a frog man, and he can't really live amongst humans anymore, even though it stretches credulity at a certain point in the Marvel Universe when there's so many people who look weird and have powers, but that's a separate issue. I think the fact, yes, they each have all these powers, and powers meaning, yeah, they have a silver hand that makes that is, so their hand is basically useless. It just has weird scales on it. Another girl has a second spine, and that doesn't, it just causes her pain once in a while. And that's like, it's the realism of like of mutation with radiation and real life chemicals. It's never, oh, you get powers. No, it's no, you get cancer. No, mm-hmm. you get some deformity. It doesn't, it's not sexy, it's terrible. And I think what you said about there is no overarching plot of like, oh, we're gonna use these girls for whatever. It's no, like, oh, there's weird stuff happening on this island. Let's try and figure out what it is. But it is largely still a medical issue. It is a problem with, if this gets out, it will kill humanity.
Yeah. But so do you think we never really got clarity on if the headmistress knowingly kind of led the girls into this. She said to Hetty, like, that, oh, well, I knew there was some stuff going on, but I didn't know that it would affect you girls. And Hetty assumes that's a lie.
I
kind of like not knowing. But
no, I think that's my largest complaint about the book. And it's still very minor, I think. I don't think it really affects my opinion of the book as a whole. It is the fact that we learn there's a parasite involved. I don't think I needed to know that. I don't think I wanted to know really what caused the tox. You could have said something came out of the ground from global warming. It spread through flowers and crabs into people. I don't need to know that there's some giant worm in people and the girl rips it out. Like, I think that's a very good image. Like, that's powerful imagery of, like, someone literally ripping out, like, this awful thing out of their body.
Yeah.
But I kind of would be happier not knowing, I think. I agree with you. I don't want to know. I don't really care if I know if the headmistress is in on it or not. I think, frankly, like, she's obviously taking some sort of medicine that is stopping it from happening. I think that's what is implied with those sores around their mouths, the yellow sores. Yeah,
I think so.
I assume that's what I took at that her and the other teachers were taking some sort of weird medicine that would give them sores, and but it also would keep them from getting the tox, whatever. It kills the parasite, basically. I'm guessing is that it's some sort of anti parasite medicine that also is somewhat detrimental to your own body.
Oh,
it's my guess.
That's a good guess.
But I mean, I like that it doesn't spell it out. It doesn't say. It just says, oh yeah, she has sores, weird yellow sores around their mouths. And I just go, okay. I assume that's, oh, they are taking, the military is slipping them something that keeps the parasite from taking hold of them.
So that they can still be in communication,
and take control and send out girls.
That's
and stuff.
A really interesting theory, because I was assuming, I think along with the protagonist, both of them, that it was an age thing, that it was like only going to affect. But that's not true, because it affected Reese's dad, and it affected. I mean, we can tell it's contagious just from the kiss. Like, Teddy is not a teenage girl, and he got it like immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're right. It had to have been something else.
I mean,
damn.
And I mean, it has that, you know, it has that kind of feeling of, I think I'd be happier if I also didn't know necessarily what's going on outside at all. Like, I like I like the lab stuff, and frankly, the labs are still on the island, so it doesn't really mean anything to me. But it's more like at a certain point, we get a little bit of information from outside, like, oh yeah, your parents think you're dead. I kind of don't. I don't want to know about the outside world at all. I like the idea of that they're so isolated, and they get visited by this boat that has these people on it, and they just give them this shipment, and then they leave, and we don't know how the outside world is. And at a certain point, you have to do it that way, I think, because they have a jet coming in to bomb the island. If there's a jet coming in to bomb the island, the military obviously is still in power and still has control. And I briefly had the idea of I'm going to ask you this question, Paige. I think this connects to this. It's a two-part question. One, do you think this could support a sequel? And two, do you want one?
The writing was so good. And I feel like if there was a sequel, I would definitely read it. Do I feel like it could support a sequel? I think a sequel would probably take away a lot of the mystery and explain things that felt like they were purposely left to our imagination. And I don't know what the sequel would be. Would it be another? Would it be whoever survived on the island, if anybody? Would it be our three girls somehow getting to safety? Because I kind of liked how that was left. Like, did they survive? Did they not survive? You decide, sort of thing. I don't know that. I think a sequel could be made. But I don't think that it would be necessary. And it feels like a really solid standalone. So it feels like it would be a lot of information that we don't necessarily need.
Yes, I largely agree with you. There's often, whenever something's very successful, obviously there's always a temptation to write something that will also market itself like, oh, it's a sequel to Wilder Girls.
Yeah, and also, like, that's, you know, I could be wrong. I keep saying, like, I don't know how they're going to do another season of The Good Place, because where are they going to go from here? And they keep making seasons and they're great. So
I think, well, I mean, I think they announced that this,
I know only, the only next one's one the last more. One.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I said that on like the first season. No, season one, I was like, what are you going to do now? We know it's not The Good Place. And they just, so
another spin.
Very different things, but yeah, there could be.
I think there, a sequel with this would be kind of set in the same universe, but different characters, or
yeah,
maybe,
so
or distant time jump where we're following one of these three girls. And the mystery is what happened to them after they got off the island, and something, maybe they are put in a position of power themselves and they are in control of where Tox is. You know, it could be post-apocalyptic where Tox has, they spread the Tox, or who knows. You could do it.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of places you could take it. I largely think this works best as a standalone thing. You that leave that mystery, a lot of the mysteries unanswered. Even though I think most of the mysteries to me, I think are vaguely answered, not necessarily, you're not giving concrete details about a lot of stuff, but I think aside from if they make it at the end, I think most of the, in, you know, the big mystery, like, I don't really need to know what the Tox is large. Like, I don't need a specific answers about, this is not science fiction. This is, you know,
right.
I don't need some kind of very distinct scientific explanation of, oh, the Tox works like this, and this is how it spread, and this is why the Navy did this, and et cetera, et cetera. I'm like, it doesn't matter. This is not, this book is not about that. You know, it is about these girls and their relationship and how they survive, how they live through this calamity, and how mm-hmm. they struggle, and how they deal with losing everything, and not even necessarily like we see Reese struggle so much with her father's death, or at least in his disappearance. When he comes back, she still has affection for him, even though he's just a giant swamp thing. He's a big plant monster.
Yeah.
But the other girls themselves, they are, I think that's the heartbreaking thing, is I think we realize it much before, well before they do, at least Hattie in particular, where like they're holding out hope that they're going to get rescued, and that they're going to find a cure, and that their family is going to welcome them back with open arms. And I think early on, I was like, there's you guys. It's just sad because, you know, none of that is going to happen. I don't think I ever held out any hope that there'd be a cure in this book. This book is not a, it would have surprised the hell out of me if suddenly in the last three chapters, oh, there's a cure. We're all better now.
I thought if there was a cure, it would come at a very high cost. And I wasn't sure what that cost would be, whether it would be like, you know, they don't have their personalities anymore. They're, you know, like something like, sure, they don't have the virus, but they're not themselves anymore. And I didn't think it was going to go in that direction, but I think I knew if there was a cure, something was going to be taken away as well as the virus.
We kind of got a hint of that. Sort of.
We did at the end where it was like, oh, but also was that because the Tox was gone, or was that because she had lost so much blood and was dying? Like, are you talking about Bryant at the beach when they find her?
Yeah. Yeah. She's alive, but she's also like out of it. And, you know, she's lost the parasite and she's gotten some kind of gas that, you know, theoretically would kill her, but maybe she didn't. They theorize, oh, she survived because she ripped out the parasite, and because she ripped it out in time, it didn't really kill her, but it also, the parasite somehow like took her personality with it. But we don't really know any of that. She's just kind of comatose.
Yeah,
she's in kind of weird stasis, and we don't really know what that is. But I think that is, I feel like that's very appropriate. Like, they have, over this 18 months, they have become kind of, the Tox has become a part of them. It has become mm-hmm. like the way their bodies look now. I identifies them just as much as that is their person. Their personality is, oh, I'm the girl with one eye. Oh, I'm the girl with the weird hand. I'm the girl that, you know, their weird mutation has come to identify them. And they lose that parasite. They lose the tox. They lose themselves. They you know, I feel like it's a very appropriate that Byatt doesn't come out of it. You know, at least not that mm-hmm. we see. We don't, you know, who knows what happens. But I think that's, again, something I don't really need answered. I'm totally cool with it being vague. They're in a boat on the ocean, and they can't the shore, no matter how far they go, it just stays the same distance away. And, you know, one of the Reese is like, oh, there's the tide's coming in, we might as well just wait it out. And that's the story of them. That's just like,
wow, you're right. That is an interesting way to look at that.
They're just waited out. Yeah, waited out. I think we're getting at earlier. This book is solely, I mean, we get a little bit of flashback here and there, and a little bit of like, hey, this is how life used to be. We get a little bit of that. But mostly, the book doesn't concern itself with what happened prior to the tox. It is all about how their lives are now, and how their identities prior to the tox are kind of gone. You know, they are, and anything that, like, even Reese, she is still connected to her life in the past by her father. Like, oh yeah, my dad's still out there. I know he is. And then I think that's what we see when we see her struggle so much. We see her, like, it's not even just, oh, it's my dad and he's dead. You know, I think mm-hmm. I think that's probably part of it, but I think it's also my connection to life prior to this. He was a concrete, real thing that I could remember about my prior life, about life that was normal and happy. And as long as he's alive, there's still a possibility of that. I can still reach it. I can still touch it. And then he dies.
Mm-hmm.
Gets killed. And she loses that too. She's lost. It's not just she's lost her father. She's lost her connection to her past life, to a normal life. And maybe, you know, she had some. It feels like Reese in particular, and one, we don't see Reese's thoughts, so it's hard to say for sure. But it feels like very much like Reese is still holding out that kind of hope that, oh, my dad will be okay and they'll get to come back with a cure and everything can go back to normal.
Oh, yeah. Especially, I mean, even that scene where they went back to her house, that I feel like if that would have been from Reese's perspective, it would have been heartbreaking. But what we see of Reese, except for the moments where she's like visibly like kind of falling apart, she's kind of got like that hard shell, seems like strong, and that like keeping her feelings to herself, and it all comes out in aggression. And I think if we would have seen that whole section through her perspective, it would have been really like more heartbreaking, because it was already emotional, but I think it would have been like just so sad. It would have been so sad if it would have been inside her head during that whole ordeal.
The book itself is it kind of just heartbreaking, heartrending.
Yeah.
It's really, really melancholy is not a good enough word. Melancholy is not sad enough. It is kind of destroying. It is like erosion. You're kind of watching erosion in fast forward. You're watching these girls just kind of like lose themselves over and over and over again. And I think that's the best horror and body horror, for that matter, is that connection to self and that loss of self, and that, like, not just loss of my hand, it is like loss of my humanity. They are losing it ounce by ounce, and it's just being ripped from them because of what they have to do to live. And like we talked about earlier, about them leaving all those girls behind to get eaten by a bear or whatever is out there. All the animals are carnivorous all of a sudden. The deer are suddenly angry, carnivorous monsters. There's nothing that's happy any. There's everything on that island is now out for blood, and I think there is. It's not just, oh, that's sad. It feels like you're like you can feel them just losing every bit of themselves throughout this book, and it's I don't know. But I don't want to discount how achingly beautiful it is at the same time.
Yeah, I mean it's gorgeous, and it's really impressive how something so like you used the word somber, and then it was you had it landed on a different one, but like how something so grim and deteriorating can just be worded so beautifully, like all of the imagery, even the way that she just like put everything together in a way where it was like grotesque and beautiful and then sad and then gross again. Like it was very well balanced.
And it's very much that combination, and it's not an easy thing to do. It is very difficult to like the book I've been revising. I was revising recently has a lot of body art in it, and it is a constant tenuous push pull of what do you describe, what do you not describe, how do you, what tenor and tone do you want to establish with this terrible, terrible thing? But you don't, if you push it too far, it becomes absurd. It kind of is counter to what you actually want. You want to use this, you know, in this book, she has these moments where, you know, you want to connect that loss of humanity with how their mutations affect them. And you don't, like what you're talking about earlier, Paige, about how she doesn't ever put too much detail on you at any one time. It's slowly eked out, you know, a little bit here or there about the details of their mutations and how they get worse and worse and worse. But we're never flooded with it, because you can get desensitized to it. If you get too much of it early on or too much at any one time, it doesn't mean anything anymore, because you're just like, oh, it's another moment of someone's body exploding or whatever. It doesn't mean anything. It's like a slasher movie where you're just like, oh, I've seen so much violence. It becomes slapstick. It becomes funny because it's just absurd. It's like Monty Python in The Black Knight when they start chopping chopping off arms and legs, and fountains of blood shoot out, and you're just like, okay, he's obviously fine with it. So this doesn't mean anything anymore. It's funny, and I think that delicacy and the intricacy of it is incredibly impressive. And what you said earlier about feel like I should study this.
Yeah,
I feel honestly. Like this is a book I'm going to reread. I will reread this and look at it closely, because I feel like it can teach something to writers in particular. I think this book is great. I think there's some minor plot stuff I have a little bit of problems with here and there about, like, motivation of get. Like, I think my one sticking point was her. Willingly, they take that canister back to the school, and I'm immediately like, just throw it over. That's not, come on, come on. But I, you know, at a certain point, these girls aren't thinking straight, and there's terrible things are happening, and they just had to kill one of their own because, you know, she is obviously not with them anymore, and like there's all these crazy things happening every day, and things are falling apart. So ultimately I can kind of go, I can forgive it. You know, there's always those kind of moments in when literally everyone is losing their minds because of that. She hasn't eaten in 3 days at that point or something awful. It's like, it's just a calamitous combination, some alliteration there. I don't know. I think this book is really good. And I wholeheartedly suggest, if you haven't read it yet, you should. And frankly, this is one of those books where it, I really also like it because it can't, you can't really spoil it. I think there is amount of mystery in it, but I don't think it rides on the, like, at the end of the day, I was not really reading it to get answers. You know, I think that there is a glut of mystery box kind of television for sure, and books as well, where people are like, it's just like, hey, empty cliffhangers, empty cliffhangers, empty cliffhangers. And you get around that and make substantive art by writing strong characters. And I don't really care about the mystery of the tox and who's, why is the Navy doing this and et cetera, et cetera. I care about Hetty and I care about Byatt and I care about Reese, and I want to see what happens to them, and I want to see how they deal with each other and their relationship and how they are able to stay together, you know. And it doesn't really matter. The process of it is so beautiful and the prose is so strong. It doesn't really matter what, oh, I know how it ends. That doesn't matter. Who cares how it ends? The impact of every step along the way is just as important. You know, those little moments where they're lying in bed and Hetty is just like laying there in the dark or the quiet and bundled up next to her friends, and her contemplating life is just as impactful to me in this as, you know, them running through the woods away from some terrible monster.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The quiet moments like really shine in this book. Like, it's 10 out of 10. Like, I personally would have been upset if anyone would have spoiled it for me. Because I read it with that, I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't know how this is going to end. How could this end? Like, what's going on here? Like, I think the mystery elements could have been spoiled a little bit, but I wouldn't have wanted to know that it ended with them in a boat, like, and at not necessarily a cliffhanger, but that very open-ended, is this a book where everybody dies in the end? Like, well, we don't know. You don't know. Like,
I mean, I think that it feels very much like an anti-cliffhanger. It feels like the end of The Mist, a Stephen King novella, which I don't like.
I have not read, but
I'm following you. It's good. It is the movie that I don't like the movie simply because they give the movie a concrete ending. I think I like the story because it is, again, it is an open-ended kind of anti-cliffhanger where, like, the story is there is a group of people in a small town. They are in a grocery store, and then a mist descends. And then in the mist, there are monsters. And the monsters are indescribable. They are weird, terrible things that aren't recognizable as any creature alive. And they don't know why the mist arrives, and they don't know what it is. All they know is if they go out into it, they get eaten. And so it becomes a very tense kind of a combination of personalities inside this grocery store. But we, at the end of that, there is no ending. It's never explained what the mist is, really. It's vague, like very much like the tox, where it's like, it's this sort of. And I think this ending where it's like, oh, she's, you know, I kind of went back and forth about this ending. I'm like, do I want them to live? Did I want them to, would I feel like it's more appropriate if they don't live? You know, and I feel like, no, I think keeping all the characters alive and in this tenuous state, I feel like is perfect, ultimately. It's kind of what I ultimately landed on. It's very much like, no, I really like this ending. I think our discussions come kind of elucidate that for me. Trying to think if there's anything else we haven't touched on. I could talk about there's a lot of smaller details in this that are, you know, I think I could talk about forever. it has a lot of stuff in, like, I feel like it's very dense as well. We talked about, like, oh, it's relatively short. It's very dense. I feel like it has a lot of intent.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a short read. You know, I think there's an anticipation when, oh, it's a short book, for it to be, like, I breezed through reading it, but it wasn't a breezy kind of book. Like, it, you know, this isn't, I mean, I guess depending on what you want to be consuming. I was about to say it's not your weekend beach book, but it could be. You can read what you want on the beach. I'm not here to make rules. But no, it's packed with a lot of like information and feelings and scary deer and bears, you know?
Yeah, I am waiting. I have a feeling that this will be a movie at some point.
Yes, I think so too. I feel like if not a major motion picture, I feel like a Netflix miniseries. Like, my gosh, Netflix has been buying up so many books. Like, this, I feel like this could be like a one season multi like long episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Miniseries, it would work really well. She's apparently already a story consultant for TV adaptations, so...
Oh, well, there you go.
Wouldn't be that hard. And I'll tell you, it's easy to say, oh, get out of shape whenever I get a one-star review on a book, but this book got a one-star review. I don't know who these people are. These are monsters. You're a monster. Why would you one star? Do you read the book?
I don't understand. People did they are... not finish the book?
Or maybe
I guess everyone like... has different tastes.
Well, also, there's like, there's girls in it. Bleh.
Are you kidding?
I don't know. I didn't read the review. It would make me angry. I mean, that's a possibility.
People do get spam reviews, though. Like, mm-hmm. I have a friend who writes paranormal and fantasy, and on one of her fantasy books, she got a one-star review because she's a woman. The person didn't read it. They're just like, women shouldn't be writing fantasy.
Yeah, the review bombs are gross.
Yeah.
Water Girls is great. You should read it out there. I'm going to read it again probably at a certain point.
Same.
It's one of those books. I'm really looking forward to her whatever she writes next.
Yeah, same. She has a new fan. Two new fans.
Exactly. That's always a really nice feeling when you discover someone and you're like, oh, every book they write forever, I'm going to have a new book I'm going to get excited about.
I know. I love that. I love when you're like, you are now one of my favorites. Okay.
Oh, she has a new book out. It's coming out, blah, blah, blah. All right. Bye.
I just got so excited. I thought you meant like.
No, not right now.
That there was an announcement. I'm like, oh,
no.
Just came out, but okay.
No. This book came out, let's see, in like literally last month. So I don't think she'll have another one for a little while at least. Assume that it'll take more than her a little bit more time to write, unless she has a bunch of books she's already have done or something. But I don't know about that at all. Not everyone's a maniac like me.
It's true.
Not everyone's a maniac. That is the story of my life. Me realizing. Everyone is not a maniac like me. Anything else you want to add, Paige?
I don't think so. I think I was sufficiently gushed about this book.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have much to add, even though I could probably talk about finer details forever.
Yeah, like I feel like we could go in and like sometime next year we're like, okay, we're rereading it and we're going to talk about it from like a needle and haystack, just combing through all those details.
I mean, there's those podcasts that do movies minute by minute.
There we go. Word by word.
Yeah, I think that's a little too much.
This is a very long podcast.
Yeah. I've done a 3-hour podcast before dissecting. I think for when we talked about Watchmen in my comic book podcast, we talked about Watchmen for like 2 hours. Because there's that much to talk about. I probably could do that with this book if I really focused on it and like dissected it. Our next book. Now for something completely different. Yep. It is it's spooky. We are going to be talking about Hocus Pocus in the all new sequel, which is a book sequel to prose sequel to the Hocus Pocus movie. Focusing on a daughter of the original characters and her struggles with Halloween strife. But I think...
Just a bunch of Hocus Pocus.
Hocus Pocus was before its time. I think Hocus Pocus...
Was it?
No, I mean, I think Hocus Pocus would be more popular now if it was re-released and became a... I think they're making a sequel, aren't they? Aren't they making a real
rumors about that?
Right, and it never actually happens.
I think that this was the sequel that everyone was talking about. Like, oh, there's going to be a sequel to Hocus Pocus, and it turned out to be a book, not a movie. They're making a new Lizzie McGuire, so literally anything is possible.
Anything is possible. This is a actual sequel, not just some rumor. So we will we'll read that. We'll discuss it. You guys can read along with us if you'd like. Paige, where can they find you and your books online?
Oh man, I'm all over the internet. My books are all on Amazon. A couple of them are on BarnesandNoble.com, but yeah, my website has all of the information. So just type in my name in the Google and come say hi.
I'll have a link to Paige's Amazon page where you can find links to all the books and you can buy them. You should buy Paige's books and review them.
Thanks. You should buy Robbie's books too, also. Hey.
They're going to hear they're going to hear me say that exact same thing again. So I agree.
You're hearing it first here.
Yes, and then I agree. You should buy. The writer of my books, also agree you should buy my books and review them also. If you've read them and enjoyed them, I'd really appreciate that. I'll do it for us today. Paige, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Paige for joining me. You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Norman, and my website is robbienorman.com. You find links there from other podcasts and a link to purchase my horror novels, including my newest novel, Truth, available now on Amazon. You can read it for free with Kindle Unlimited. Certainly encourage you to do so. The show's website is serialfanasist.com. You can follow our Facebook page at facebook.com/serialfanasist. If you like the show, please give it a 5-star review, tell your friends, subscribe, you know, all the podcast things. It helps me out, helps the show out. I appreciate it. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.